Gentlemen, welcome to the Front Row Dad Podcast. While it's common to hear men say, family first, most guys are working long hours and finding it really difficult to juggle all the priorities. On this show, you're going to hear unscripted conversations with guys who are as committed to winning at home as they are to winning at work. Each week, we're going to share a new conversation, digging into the strengths and the struggles of guys just like you and me to help us level up our dad game, strengthen our marriage, succeed in business, and stay healthy along the way. If you're new to the show, I'm John Vroman, married to the free spirit known as Tatiana, father of two boys, Tiger and Ocean, and living in Austin, Texas. Let's get right into our next conversation. Dr. Skylar Pond, welcome to the Front Row Dad Podcast, man. Glad you're here.
Oh, so good to be here, John. Thank you for having me.
So, dude, it was fun learning about your world, and I'm still learning about it now. A certified chiropractor sports physician, right? Working with pro rugby, the Seattle Seawolves, MMA. Dude, this is really cool. And you're doing Brazilian jiu-jitsu?
Yes.
Competed over 10 years in kettlebell, CrossFit, and the Broken Skull Challenge. What the hell is the Broken Skull Challenge? And don't sign me up.
Well, you know, you just kind of described it. If you take rugby and strongman and jiu-jitsu, and then you put it in the desert with Steve Austin as the host, that's the Broken Skull Challenge. It's really a brilliant idea. So simple. It was like, did you watch American Gladiator when you were a kid?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so that was like a futuristic version of Steve Austin's like hillbilly dirtbag version. You just, let's take these competitors, put them out in the desert and have them just kind of fight for our entertainment. It was wild. It was super fun.
What was that? Tell me more about the experience. What was that like? How did you train? What happened during the whole filming of the show?
Well, that was a great example of me taking a little bit of a step back from my life and thinking, how do I want to tell the story when I'm old man Pond? What do I want the grandkids to be talking about? And that was really just me saying, okay, this sounds uncomfortable, but I'm in. I want that story. I want that experience. So I hadn't even seen the show before. It was on CMT. I think they did 6 seasons, and then they lost their contract there with CMT. But I was training with all the other things that I do, strongman and kettlebell and having fun and doing all that. And one of my coaches who watches CMT signed me up. So I guess at the end of the show, Steve Austin, you're familiar with Steve Austin, right?
Yeah, sure.
Bravado, you know, 12 out of 10. You know, he just looks at the camera and says, we're looking for the toughest son of a bitch in America. And, you know, if that's you or you think you know that person, then, you know, put your name in the line and come out to the ranch and we'll throw down and see what's up, you know. So it was just like an open call out to the community. And a friend of mine, one of my coaches, said, well, that's Skylar, which I was flattered by. It's like, interesting. All right. 40-year-old chiropractor, father too, toughest son of a bitch in America. Let's see what happens. So I filled out their application between patients. I still hadn't seen the show. And I got a call back from the producers, which is shocking to me, because I just didn't feel like I fit that bill. But who knows what their demographics are, right? Maybe they're trying to get this middle-aged, bald demographic dialed in, and they want me to be their flagship. I don't know.
That's funny.
So I did a little teleconference interview, and I was pretty reluctant, to be honest, during this interview. The thought of, you know, I didn't have any background in jiu-jitsu or anything at that time. It's like, you know, you could do something like this and have great success. You could win and break your arm, and not be able to help your patients for 8 weeks, and fall into debt. This could all happen as a result of things going best case scenario on this show, right? So I was a little bit one foot in, and as life is, when they didn't call me back, I became increasingly obsessed with needing to be on the show, right? Like, you want what you can't have, and that's a normal reaction. So I ended up chastising these poor producers. You know, I had their phone numbers, and I'd send them text messages and photos of me doing weird stuff, and just, I was persistent. I was all over. Made a highlight video of some weird things, you know, and I remember, I think what put me over the top, actually, I know this, because when I was on the show, like, everybody was aware of this, even, like, the person, like, doing your mic and your touch-up camera work, they were all kind of like, oh man, that was a great text. Like, they all were kind of aware. When I texted them and said, I understand you're looking for the baddest son of a bitch in America, and I'm the Michael Jordan of bad sons of bitches, and the road to that title goes through me. send. And then I was on the show.
Dude, that's yeah. great, man.
You know, it was just the right combination of something just out of reach and enough pre-workout or caffeine or whatever to just kind of push you into that place. But
Dude, in the world of combat sports, the ability to be a shit talker is like so important.
It's like 3/4 of the game at this point, it seems like, right? Cool. that was a big journey way out of my comfort zone. And that's something that I've always kind of been aware of. I have a comfort zone. I try to step out of it as much as I can when I have that opportunity. And going out alone into a desert, and you should have seen the forms we signed. Oh my goodness. I don't know where these forms were referring to, but they're talking about like, if you're dismembered, if you die, if we can use anything we get on you, even if it's hidden cameras, like whatever we do, if it's entertaining, it's in the show, even if it's inaccurate, we got it. Yeah. I'm sure I signed something said I'd never mention this on a podcast. I mean, it was like this deep. And that's your experience. And they do this wonderful job of creating tension. The sports psychology on this was just fantastic. I get picked up in a van and they tell me like, hey, just because you're here doesn't mean you're here. We got 12 of you guys here and only 8 are on the show. So already you're like already competing. I get picked up in a van. I jump in and I'm like, all right, what's going on? I'm Skyler. And you know, like you got to be on. And not one person turns a head toward me. I'm just interesting. And I pick up on, oh, all these people in this packed van are the other competitors. and they just did that. I was explained that you're never to speak to these other people ever unless you're on camera and Steve Austin directs you to talk some trash.
Wow.
And it's kept these, you know, these big aggro dudes all in these really small confined places for a long time leading up to this final moment where you're on camera and you're never allowed to speak to each other. And it's just natural to assume the worst about each other, I think. And the tension builds up. They finally hit play and hit go. Man, fireworks pop off. It was super exciting. And I got into some emo drama with one of the guys there and I had a little temper tantrum and they loved that. So they brought me back for an All-Stars episode to fight this guy again. So I was on season 2 and then they brought me back for the All-Stars episode in season 5.
Wow. Yeah. That's cool, man. Thank you for sharing that story. I don't have a one-up story for you. I have a story that will help make you look even better, Skyler.
All right, let's go. That's
this is the opposite of a one-up. No, the only way I can somewhat relate to what you're talking about is that I was in LA one time at an event. I was getting some food with a buddy and this person walks up to me and hands me a card and says, I'm a producer for Fear Factor. I'd like to interview you for the show. And I thought, oh, that's kind of cool. Like never had that happen before. Yeah. And then I did a video interview. Like you're talking, they had me set up a camera and I got on a phone call and they were...
So like right there on the spot on the street?
Yeah. Well, no, this was a little bit later. So I'd followed up and I did this from my office in New Jersey at the time. Mm-hmm. But I'll never forget, like it was a video conference is what it was. And I remember the moment when they're asking me questions and I feel like everything's going well. And then they're like, all right, now we need you to take off your shirt. And I took off my shirt, you know, to show them the body. And they're like, all right, cool. Thanks for the interview. See you later. So at that moment, I was not rocking a body that was fit for Fear Factor, apparently.
Let's assume that the interview went terribly and the shirtless shot was the only thing that kept you in the interview.
That's right.
Let's go up there.
That's right. Yeah. Where they were so intimidated. They're like, this guy's going to steal all the attention.
No. Seriously. Hey, Joe Rogan's going to get no camera time.
That was my only experience with being a possible attendee on a TV show. But man, props to you for doing that. That's really ballsy to step into the arena and to take that on, man. That says a lot about you as a man. And I think it's cool when our kids can learn about those experiences from their parents and say, when they can say, man, my dad really stepped up. He did adventurous things. So,
yeah, and is it important that my children wrestle people in the desert? I would say no. It might have some value. That's not the trajectory
that I'm
aiming at. But yes, that skill of them being very familiar with my ability and my kind of leadership and role model of saying yes, opening up doors, seeing what's available, and just kind of leaning from the front as I try to do with my little pack with my boys.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's cool, man. Hey, last thing on this sports topic of combat challenges. Did you see the show on Netflix, which is called like Home Game or something?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I think that is it. With the region in Italy?
The rugby team.
Oh, my goodness. That is a heck of an episode. Yeah.
What was that called? I got to Google this really quick.
What was the name of the... I think it is called Home Game.
Yep. Home game is the show.
And each episode is its own little corner of the world where they have their strange challenge. Yeah, that game, that really brings it all together, doesn't it? I mean,
it's crazy.
What do you think? If you were in that region, would you be on like white team?
So yeah, we got to give a little background here because this is incredible. Yeah. So for anybody who doesn't know what we're talking about, we got to find the name of this too. For some reason, I'm not getting, it's such a great name. Oh, Calcio, Storico, Calcio Storico? I don't remember,
sure.
But that's it, guys. And basically what it is, imagine it's 27 players on either side, right? And they're going head to head. It's like rugby. You're trying to score in the net. You got a ball, you're trying to score it in the net at the end of the at the end of the field. But it's MMA, it's boxing, it's literally they engage in bare knuckle fist fighting.
Yes.
Right? And this goes, and yeah, I mean, it's brutal. And they fight for, nobody gets paid. They're fighting for their hometown. There's four regions of Florence.
Do you remember what the payment is? It used to be that you won this giant cow that you got to have a feast with.
Right.
Right. And your village would all eat this wonderful steak dinner, and it was a huge achievement. But now you just get to look at the cow.
That's right.
after you lose all your teeth and you've been multiply concussed and you're compromised, maybe for the rest of your life, you're never the same. But this cow walks by you and you're like, fair trade.
Dude.
Yeah. Yeah, this beautiful white cow just graces you with the presence.
Unbelievable.
So they play two matches per year because, yeah, I mean, it takes all year to kind of recover from it.
Yeah, because match number one, 10 days later, you play. You see all these guys and you would be making money hand over fist over there as a chiropractor.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, just handing that card out. I mean, it does look like rugby when you are actually attacking with the ball. You're kind of like that lateral passing and speed. But then, you just have 20 of your friends punching each other in the neck for like 15 minutes before you go.
How about this one shot where the guy literally tackles him from behind? It's basically no rules, basically.
Speared him in the lower back.
And that's not healthy.
There was something about that really touched a nerve, right? Like that's not right.
For both
of you.
That's
not right. Now, all of that face punching, I can deal with it. The choking seemed reasonable.
Exactly.
That was a line that I don't see crossed too often.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Oh, dude, how do you feel about your kids getting involved in combat sports? Seriously, I know you were just joking around like, hey, maybe they don't end up in a desert wrestling somebody for a championship on TV, but what do you think?
Well, I mean, I've been negotiating that for a long time. So I started my boys into weight training and Olympic lifting and kettlebelling when they were very young, you know, at age 8 and 12. So they've got all these tools, you know, they're strong, they're powerful, and they'd love to go use this stuff. And they've been begging me to play football, contact football, like their whole lives. And I've just been playing my role of trying to divert that interest and that passion into other directions. And I played football when I was young too, and I get it. It's fine. It'll happen eventually, but I don't see any hurry in regards to that. You know, as a physician, as a sports physician, I understand that the dangers of concussion, but just the tip of the iceberg. What's really scary for a physician, and as a teen physician, is the dangers of subconcussive blows in the developing brain. So that means maybe you tackled somebody, made a good clean tackle, everything went fine, it was jarring, but no concussion, everything's fine. The impact of that on the developing brain is what concerns me. And the research shows that it does impact long-term emotional wellness, rates of depression, math scores, things of that nature. So I'm always trying to walk that line, toe that line between encouraging them to be brave and physical and not trying to put them in a bubble too much, but also trying to pump the brakes a little bit. I ended up starting a rugby program for my children because of this.
Yeah.
And it was really, we're at the line like, look, my son really, who did he see? I don't know. My youngest, he's pretty fearless kid. And unless you're talking about spiders and needles, then he's.
How old are they again?
Totally fearful. 13 and 17.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he saw some running back jump over somebody, hurdle somebody, and then land low, crouch, and then just plaster a safety. And he's like, that's it. That's what life's about. That's what I need to do with myself. I found my calling. I need to jump over people and run over the next guy. Yeah. And I've had to redirect that, you know. So we started a youth rugby program here in West Seattle about 4 or 5 years ago. And it starts at two-hand touch, and then it really gets into the fundamentals of appropriate, safe mechanics of tackling. And that was a reasonable compromise for me. so I got both my boys into that, but my older son is way more into soccer. So he only kind of came out for one or two matches and dominated, but left. And my younger boy is way more into basketball. So that kind of ran its course. And I was a little conflicted with this subconcussive blow concept as well. Like, I'm great at diagnosing a concussion and managing a concussion, but when there aren't any signs or symptoms, until some studies show that 10 years down the road there are signs and symptoms, that's out of my comfort zone to control. And that's when I kind of pull back on that thing. Yeah. But I think it's important to diversify. Sports specialization is a dangerous thing for kids to go down that road. And that's so common with the competitive nature, I think, of parents. Parents are so dang competitive with each other that you hate to give up a little bit of an advantage to the other parents of, well, my boy took 3 months off and went and did swimming. Well, mine didn't. Mine did four more basketball camps. And, you know, we get out of control with this competitive nature on the sideline. And that's where I try to stay conscious of and try to diversify what the heck the boys are doing. I had my 13-year-olds do a stint in judo. We were kind of alluding to after reading a Ronda Rousey book. And he's done one judo tournament and he took gold. And he's like, okay, I'm good. I'm never doing it again. And I was telling you before we got on, I competed in that tournament as well because I just wanted that experience. Okay, we're both going in. I remember that drive. It was raining. We had a 45-minute drive. We didn't have anybody with us. We drive out to some junior college. We don't know the rule set to judo. We've never seen it before. We've just been doing kids' classes for a month. And we stepped in there and we competed together and faced all our demons and had that experience. And then just kind of walked away from it. It's like, all right, what's next? And signed them up for a jiu-jitsu tournament. And I try to keep them going in different directions. I figure contact's inevitable, intensity's inevitable, wear and tear's inevitable. I want a nice, even wear pattern, you know? Yeah. And that's what I aspire for my patient base. And my adults I work with, you know, in their 40s, 50s, 60s, we're trying to get back to that. And it's just great to have that conscious kind of approach from a young age and start from there. It's tough, though. My boy just wants to play basketball year-round. He just wants to dunk. My 17-year-old just wants, he's a collegiate soccer player track, you know, and he just wants to play soccer. So I just try to introduce as many strange little nuances to that physicality as I can and see if I can get some things to take hold. Yeah.
Do you wrestle at all with how much you invite them in and give them choice and how much you say, nope, we're doing this. I signed you up. We're going to go do this. Like, what does that look like for you?
That's trial and error, 100%. So it works differently. One of my boys is a sign me up. You know what's best. Tell me what to eat, when to sleep, what to lift, when to do it. I'm in. I've got 100% buy-in out of one of my guys, and so that's how we go. And my other boy has his own worldview and knows what's best for him, and I trust his instincts. And with him, I kind of breadcrumb him into other directions, you know? Like with one of my boys, I write all of his programming. Like, this is where you're going to lift, at what weight, and this is how we're going to do it. And I, you know, we're a team. We do it like that, a real strong mentorship kind of a role. And with my other boy, it's far more encourage him and direct him. And he just wants to have fun his whole life. He just wants to play and have fun. And the training has to be fun. And the payoff has to be now for one of my guys. And one of my guys is just Mr. Delayed Gratification. It's like, I will suffer today because I want to be where I want to be in 10 years. So yeah. I didn't plan that. I figured it out by doing the wrong thing and trying to tell him what to do and learning what works and what doesn't work and straight trial and error. And I'm sure if I had a third child, I'd mess all that up from the outset and I'd have to redirect and figure out what's the best interaction. But really what I want out of that is interaction. I want a relationship. I want a mentorship role of I've done this and let's share it with you. I have kind of a knee-jerk reaction to what I consider kind of that authoritarian father with high expectations. Like, hey, you got to get that scholarship. You got to be the best, you know, you got to be faster, that kind of a role. I see that break kids down and I don't want that as any part of my relationship with the kids. I want it to be exciting. I want it to be fun. I want us both to be reaching for something. I'm right there with them. I'm doing the same thing they are and they see me fail and I see them fail and we grow together and we have that relationship with the challenges that we take on that we try to keep some curiosity and some wonder and who knows what's going to happen. It's our job to open this door, to try hard. And it doesn't matter if we're the fastest or the strongest. That has more to do with the other kid than us. We could be quite weak, but if we're in a community of weak people, well, we're the strongest. What value does that have? So we really try to keep the focus on the process and how that's more useful for us. It has more carryover into other elements of life that they have to open up scary doors. And this is just a tool, I think, of how they can get the habit of effort reward effort reward. You know, if you
right.
whether it's a push up, a pull up, or a power clean, they get that relationship of when they put the work in, it's measurable and tangible for that return that they get. So I love that as far as the mental condition they get out of that whole experience. And that's where I try to keep my focus.
Something I want to call out is that this idea of you jumping into the arena with them, I think is so mm-hmm. cool, because it's important to let our kids see us do the thing versus just always telling them what to do. We have a challenge coming up inside our brotherhood. So we have a private group of about 165 guys, and we issue challenges each month, custom challenges that we create. And this one is let your kids catch you doing something that you want them to do, right? So rather than telling your kids to be readers, how many times did your kids walk into the room and catch you reading? You want your kids to meditate? Well, how many times have they ever caught you in the middle of a meditation?
Right.
You want your kids to be athletes? How often are they seeing you be an athlete? Because it's one thing to do those things on the weekend when you're like, I need to get away as a dad and get some time for myself and go play soccer with the boys or basketball with the boys or whatever. But if your kids aren't watching you play, then it doesn't have nearly the same impact that it does watching versus like, hey, I went and played basketball with my buddies. Oh, it's wonderful that they heard that you did that, but seeing you do it is a different thing. So I just wanted to honor you because I think that's a big part of what you're about is the involvement and the engagement and letting your kids witness you do these things. Which is great.
100%. Yeah. I just kind of think of it as leading from the front. And since they were little babies coming out to watch me play rugby on the sidelines, we've just kind of kept that going. And when I was in that big CrossFit phase, coming to all the regional competitions and being members of the crowd. And yeah, I've always had those moments where I find my little boys in the crowd and lock eyes and give them a little acknowledgement, like, all right, here we go. This is how we behave in this tribe.
You just described what we believe is a front row dad. And that's it. You just literally articulated it. So yeah, bravo. Let's take a moment and pause the present and let's go back in time for a second. While we're talking about kids, let's talk about you as a kid. And let's talk about when you look at your childhood, where was the pain and where was the win for you? Like, what about your childhood are you like, I hope my kids never go through that? And what about your childhood are you like, I want to replicate that for my kids?
That's a great question. That's what I love about these interviews. It always gets so real, so fast. Well, I don't know about something I wouldn't want them to replicate, but certainly formative experiences for me were those, that chip on your shoulder for me of being a vegetarian in a logging community. I was raised by altruistic, visionary hippies. And I was born in Lahaina, but I grew up on the Olympic Peninsula in Washington in the perfect moment for conflict. As Al Gore is putting restrictions on spotted owls and multi-generational families of loggers and mill workers are losing their jobs. And I'm going to school with all these children who have all of this strife at home of struggling parents and alcoholism and drug abuse. And I really, me and my little tribe, me and my three brothers and my parents represent that outside, that liberal movement that's really compromising everything that's ever mattered to this community. So that was a challenge, right? But I think that's a common challenge. Everyone feels that pressure they have to work against in their developmental years in high school and middle school. We all have those insecurities we have to overcome, and you're never to get done with that, right? No, I'm dealing with that as a father. You know, you look at other great dads and business owners and people who are doing it in some ways better than you, and you have to kind of resist the temptation to kind of walk away from that and ignore that. You have to always kind of get over yourself and keep putting yourself out there. But that was very formative for me. Put a chip on my shoulder. And then also the fact that I grew late, it was wonderful. Like I've got this small man syndrome I get to enjoy for the rest of my life.
Wait a minute. Tell me that story, by the way. I have a similar story. Tell me that.
Well, mine's not super exciting, but I think I was 5'3", 103 pounds as a freshman. And that was about the same size I was in middle school. And I used to always just enjoy the physicality of everything, basketball and soccer and football and everything. And then all my peers grew a foot and a half taller than me. And I was just kind of stuck behind and dealing with all of that angst and all of that frustration. And in that pretty kind of a tough community that I came up in, there was a lot of opportunity for humility and for conflict in that situation. And I wouldn't change it for the world, though. Not in that kind of vague, hey, whatever happened in the past made me who I am today. That's always kind of a cop-out on your personal story. But I wasn't able to check that box when I was 17 years old. I had to delay that until well, I'm 41 and I'm training for my next jiu-jitsu tournament. And I don't train in my age group. I don't compete in my age group. I'll compete against anybody who's my size in my belt class because I still have that chip on my shoulder. I still have something I'm trying to get back.
Did you go on your own or did you have HGH shots or...
No, I just had, it was just delayed. I was just late.
I did HGH.
Yeah, I heard one of your podcasts. Well, that was with Dr. Zach Bush.
Yeah, that's right.
Because he's an endocrinologist. Yeah. What a challenge for your parents to come to that decision, I imagine, right? Was that a big conversation at home for that?
You know, it's funny. I don't really remember. I mean, I remember there being some debate about it, but honestly, I was happy that I had a solution. And I likely would have probably naturally gotten there. But I was pretty darn late, man. I was pretty darn late. So anyway, I just really relate to that. If anybody happens to be out there with kids who are facing that same situation, just know that you're not alone. Like, heart goes out to you. That's a big decision to make.
We had a similar situation with our oldest, our 17-year-old now. We had a naturopathic physician. We always kind of go with the naturopathic route for 99% of our needs.
Your altruistic, visionary, hippie parents had an impact on you?
It certainly looks that way. Yeah. But even with our naturopath, who, you know, usually you'd think it's in the name. Hey, just relax, let nature take its course. And we were kind of being pushed toward an HGH growth hormone pathway with our boy because he was just growing late. And there's just so much pressure and anxiety. Parents, you know, always weighing and measuring the children. It starts at such a young age, making sure they're on that graph and that chart. Are they going to be okay? We're always trying to protect them from the pain of the world, right? We don't want them to be picked on. We don't want them to struggle. We want to hold them up and help them from a very early neurologic development age. I've been exposed recently to a kind of a movement of taking away all these childhood splints and prostheses and these bumpy pillows and the jumpers and the ways that we try to hold brand new babies up and not let them struggle with the pain of gravity and hardwood floors. And as parents, we're just trying to do that. Limit the pain, limit the exposure. But I try to consciously change my mindset to controlling the pain, controlling the exposure, giving them enough to grow and change without being overwhelmed. And it's not always my choice. Life's going to happen. But I try to keep that in mind because those formative experiences for me were so darn useful and so critical.
Yeah.
What's up, guys? I want to take a quick break to talk to you about our private mastermind that we call The Brotherhood. Now, we created this unique community for a very specific type of man. And you may just have found your tribe if you believe in the power of relationships, and perhaps you're always trying to outgive everyone around you. You crave ideas that make you effective and efficient in all areas of life. You resonate with the idea of being a family man with a business, not a businessman with a family. By joining our brotherhood, you'll have access to weekly interactive training calls. Get to join as many or as few as you like. Our guys commit to one of these each month. Optional small groups designed to create meaningful connections and higher accountability. A private resource library accessible to only our members. And we have challenges throughout the year to help you push your limits, and we even involve your family in a few of them. The Brotherhood is where I'm connecting every day. I'm asking questions when I need help and giving support wherever I can. Our Brotherhood was created for men with wisdom, but also those who are wise enough to know there's more to learn. And the guys who value investing time to work on their families so they can make the best of their time when they are with their families. Now, of course, you're a badass. You can do a lot on your own. You likely have for many years. And yeah, you probably don't need front row dads to have a great family, to love on your kids and have a great relationship. But one thing I know for certain is that men for years have done better in tribes versus trying to brave the world on their own. Here's what one of our members has to say about the Brotherhood.
The message of what you're doing and putting out there resonated with me at such a high level. I knew I had to be a part of it. And because I didn't know that this existed, I didn't know that front row dads was there and that community existed in that way. I mean, family men with businesses, not businessmen with families. That changed everything. That one line shifted my entire thought on what you're about, what this community is about, what this brotherhood is about, and what this group is about. And I would say, if you are a dad or an entrepreneur or a father or husband, and that resonates with you, this is a great community to be a part of because it's unlike anything else that I've seen.
If we want our kids to have great relationships and learn from others, we should lead the way and model the behavior we want to pass along. Now look, guys, the time is now to pour into your family. I read an article by Tim Urban that put everything into perspective for me about how important it is for me to get parenting right now. He wrote that 93% of all the time he'd ever spend with his mom and dad happened before he was 18 years old. And it's crazy to think that I've got only 8 more years before my oldest son is an adult. I feel confident saying that no matter how old your kids are, the time to go all in on your family is right now. We have members with newborns, and we've got guys with kids that are grown adults, members with only one child, and guys with 10, people with blended families and everything in between. But by joining our brotherhood and choosing to invest 1 to 2 hours each month, we can help you make the most of your time that you do have with your kids. So no matter how great you are at fatherhood, marriage, juggling your work and your personal life calendar, we can help you be better. If you're ready to take the next step, go to frontrowdads.com and click Join the Brotherhood today.
I have this mentor friend years ago who had kids before I did. And it wasn't even on my radar at this point, but I remember the story where his little girl was struggling, right? And mom comes over to try to help because she's struggling. And I remember when he said, hold on, let her struggle.
Yeah.
She's trying to pull herself up. And he's like, let her struggle.
Yeah.
I remember that had such a profound impact on me, even though I didn't have kids at the time. Just this idea of somebody consciously saying, this isn't life or death here. This isn't a moment where I jump in because they're about to like end their existence. This is a moment where they're going to struggle and this is going to help them.
It's so difficult for a parent to do that though, isn't it?
So all difficult.
Our instincts are to protect and to ease. I think our ancestors probably needed to do that just to keep them alive, keep the children alive, right? And now we have such infinite detrimental options for endless comfort. Yeah. And now what they need from us most is to control that and to allow it. But it goes to 100% counter to all of our natural parenting instincts. It's just part of the modern dilemma of being an adult with so many technological advantages and having readily available, easily digested carbs and glucose. I mean, our ancestors would have just been happy to get their hands on the fuels we have available too, but right. we just have to fight off that part of our brain and seek discomfort just to get into a healthy place for ourselves. Yeah, I guess that's one of the reasons why that strength and conditioning for the youngsters has been so useful for me. We can just control that in such an incremental way. And there's so many useful lessons in the value of working through that discomfort.
Let's talk about that and let's take the angle of kids and weights and training and pushing, because I think there's a story here in how much should a kid lift? How much should a kid struggle? How much should a kid be in pain? And let's speak to that for a minute, because this concept of how much do I let my kids struggle is almost like, and I'm going to do my best to articulate without muddying the waters here with a bunch of mumbo jumbo, but
all right.
But I'm going to try to articulate what I'm getting at. I remember when I was a kid, somebody saying to me, is it a muscle pain or is it like a joint pain? Is it the type of pain that's like, hey, that's a good soreness pain? Or is this like, I'm about to hurt myself pain? I remember thinking, I don't know what the fuck to say. It's just pain, right? Like, I don't know. It hurts. Yeah. Like, does hurt describe what I'm feeling right now good enough?
Yeah, it's like that coach who says, are you hurt or are you injured?
Right.
Are you hurt or are you injured? Yeah, classic.
So let's talk about that, because you're in this unique position where you see people that are truly injured, probably, right? And people that are hurting from pushing the limits. So let's get into that space of kids and parents and how we navigate all that, because that's something that I struggle with sometimes. Even like the last couple of days, I mean, it doesn't truly relate, but I'll give you an example. It's Tiger stepped on a nail in our backyard.
Oh.
And it's that whole like rusty nail. How deep did it go? How much does it really hurt him? And how much is he just milking this? Because, right?
How scary is this?
Like,
how
just
much of it is physical?
Trying to determine how, as a parent, to assess somebody else's physical condition by imposing your own blueprint of the world and perhaps trying to understand theirs when it's not so developed as a 45-year-old man versus an 11-year-old boy. Hmm. So anyway, I realized that I just completely opened up that subject to go anywhere you want to go. But what comes up for you with that, man?
For me, what comes up is I have very, very strong children, maybe dangerously so. Right? Their ability to work through discomfort, and they're into it. They take long cold showers in the morning and they go for long runs and jump in the Puget Sound, and their ability to listen to their body isn't as honed as their ability to push through their body's signals. So I feel a responsibility to frame this for them, right? I think it would be, even though the research shows universally that it's safe for children in the right context, the right programming, the right biomechanics to lift very, very heavy. I have to take my kids and bring them back a little bit, right? So I don't just say push through it, go as hard as you can. I've rolled that back when they're lifting weights. For instance, my 13-year-old, when he was in the third grade, he pulled a 185 trap bar deadlift for a 5 set of 185. You know, it's like, wow, that's a little unnatural. That's a little bit much. You weigh like 70 pounds. Let's not do that right now. Let's change the focus of how heavy you're going with this and really change the focus into movement quality and tempo quality. So I changed the rules for him. He's no longer able to go to failure. He goes to tempo failure. So if he's doing a squat set, he's not just going to stop when his body stops him. He's not going to stop when it's uncomfortable, because I know neither one of those things are going to happen in a reasonable time frame. When his tempo slows down, the set's over, right? So that's how I have to frame and control that. And we still explore those depths of discomfort, but that's with more of like metabolic conditioning, pushing a sled and carrying kettlebells as you do so. With that, I feel far more safe. Go for it. Open up the can. Let's see how deep the rabbit hole goes. Push through. Your body's going to tell you that you have to stop, that you're going to get hurt, that you're going to die. Your body's bluffing. Your body is not going to break. This is safe. We put you in a safe present situation to open it up and not have to make decisions. So with my youngest, I've taken that decision process out of his hands, and I give him the safe avenues to explore those false alarms of pain telling you it's time to stop. And I've given him boundaries where it's not safe for him to do so. And, you know, with my older boy, he's going to kind of stay comfortable with the kinds of things like with physicality. He's going to stick more with what he likes to do, where he explores discomfort. He actually recently, are you familiar with David Goggins?
Yeah.
Did you read his recent Can't Hurt Me?
No, but I listened to part of it.
Well, you know what? That's the way to go, I think, because it has that great podcast vibe wove right in there, right?
Yep.
I wasn't aware of this book, but I got very, very suspicious when I saw behaviors change at home. And you can picture this in a worse way. You know, like you notice your wife is dressing nice and wearing a different perfume, and what's going on here? It was it's like, why is my son going on lengthy, uncomfortable runs and diving in the water? And I did some investigations, like, oh, on my Audible account, he downloaded a David Goggins book.
Right.
Gotcha. So it just kind of changed his worldview. So now he's going on, out of the blue, going on a 3-mile run that he didn't feel tired enough. So he turned into a 7-mile run and jumps into the Puget Sound and stays there until whatever, he gets hungry, then comes out of the water and runs back home.
Unless he's broken bones in his feet from running so far.
If he hasn't pooped his pants yet, the run's not over. Yeah. So he definitely has that in him. But for him, that's more exciting to him. That's more interesting to him. He has his own kind of worldview and value set. He knows what's safe for him. He knows what's fun for him. And the man has unlocked something in there where he has found his mental toughness that I had no idea he had. He's always been, in my little tribe, the one with all of the talent and not as much of the grind. But now he's got both, so now we're all in trouble.
Yeah.
And David Goggins, that was the way to unlock that for him. You never know what it's going to be.
When I was 30, I read, or 29, 30, I read Dean Karnazes' book, The Ultra Marathon Man. Have you read that?
Not familiar with that one. No.
Do you know Dean at all? Are you familiar with his world?
No, it sounds like I should look in.
Dude, he was on the cover of Time Magazine, or maybe he wasn't on the cover. Maybe he was the in the top 100 most influential people. Either way, somehow the point is Dean broke massive records with running. And he wrote this book about his journey into running. And one of his stories was that he was kind of at the peak of his business life, where he had made money and he had the dream car and he was thought he was supposed to have everything he ever wanted. And he was at his birthday, on his 30th birthday, and he left a bar kind of in the middle of the party, if you will, and went home and got a pair of old running shoes out as he used to run. And he ran.
He was in the middle of a party?
Yeah, he was in the middle of a bar at a party, and he left out the back door.
Okay.
And he went home. This is like, 12, 1 o'clock in the morning type of deal. And he got running shoes and he was just having this moment and he hadn't run in years. And he ran 30 some miles, like in one direction. And he called his wife some hours later. I mean, I don't remember how far he ran, right? 30 miles, 35 miles. I don't know. It was something crazy.
Oh my God.
and his feet were bleeding. But he was like reborn in this moment, which then led to a running career where he would do crazy stuff. Like there would be a relay race where 20 people would all run 10 miles and hand the baton every 10 miles.
Yeah.
And he ran the whole thing, 200 miles. Like he set crazy records. I think he did once, I think he set a world record with 350 miles that he ran. It took him like 3 days or something. Like I don't know what it was. Crazy, crazy stuff. Amazing man. One of my favorite books. Anyway, I went...
Thank you. Yeah, I'm gonna check that out.
You got to check it out, man. You're going to love him.
All right.
And anyway, I remember when I was younger, I was about that age, and I was so inspired by him. This is like with your son and David Goggins. But my story was that I was like, I'm going to go put on my running shoes and I'm going to go run as far as I can. Because I got
Were you at a bar, right?
No.
That's where you missed.
I know, man. I should have been drunk. I needed to be drunk in order to pull this off.
Yeah.
Exactly. I didn't pay attention to the ingredients of her success.
Yeah.
But I did end up going for a run and I ran as far as I could, Skylar, until my legs were cramping and I couldn't run any further. Yeah. And I was so excited to see how far I ran. And I was convinced I ran like 10 miles and I really had no gauge because I wasn't a runner at all. Yeah. And my wife came and picked me up. I was literally replicating the story, right?
Yeah.
And she drove me home and I'm watching the odometer. And by the time I pull in my driveway, I ran 3.7 miles.
Oh, well, come on. As the crow flies, so you might have got lost.
3.7 miles, man. And I couldn't walk for like 3 days. And I was like, that was the moment I realized that Dean and I are different people. Yeah, so funny.
Well, I mean, the distance is one thing, but in my opinion, running one lap around the track as hard as you can, a 400 meter run, that's probably the hardest thing I've ever done. I've done all kinds of silly things, you know, just in that same respect. I, you know, when I was 30 years old, I decided it's over. I don't get to be physical anymore. You know, like, I don't know where I got it in my mind that was the tip of the iceberg. That was
those old 30 year old guys.
Oh, I'm not going to be able to do it anymore. So I was just in a bit of a kamikaze mission. That's when I first did that broken skull and all that stuff. And I signed up for a marathon the night before, just a lot like that. I was having nachos and a margarita with my wife at Matador here in West Seattle. And I got online, I bought a bib on Craigslist, and I got the bib from a guy who had a compression fracture in his lower leg. And I ran it the next day. And I just
full 26?
Yeah. And I had a background as a rugby player, but I was a sprinter, right? I was a winger, an outside center, and a fullback. I was a sprinter. And it was my first time ever trying to run longer than 5 miles.
Oh, my God. How long did it take you?
It took me a half hour longer than I thought. I heard that 4 hours was good. And I was like, well, I'm good.
So no, come on. It took you 4.5?
4 hours, 31 minutes, and 32 seconds.
That's crazy, man.
It was crazy. I learned a lot that day. I learned a lot about myself and about the frailty of my skin and how it will just slough off given the opportunity. And I thought I was on a kamikaze mission. I was like, I'm just going to get these things done and all. And before it's over, I felt like I had wasted something. I felt like I was given this gift of this machine to live in and I hadn't done what I should have done in it before it was too late. And I just wanted to just throw down for 6 months and see what I could do. And the experiment just worked well for me. That high intensity stuff just kind of kept going. And yeah, I'm in my 12th year of the experiment now, and it's still going pretty well. Just continuing to step outside of the comfort zone and push hard.
Awesome, man.
Yeah.
Do we need to get you involved in our health challenges for the Brotherhood? We do 6 pillars throughout the course of the year. It's an entire journey, year long. Every 60 days, we change the pillar. So we're focusing on marriage for 60 days, and then we're focusing on health. When we do our health one, man, we got to get you involved in that. That'd be really
fun. Which your focus right now, is this the one where you're getting caught in the act of...
Yeah, intentional parenting. Yep.
Oh, yep,
that's right.
I could get into this. I could get into this. I could see myself really setting something up elaborate.
This is, these are our pillars right there for anybody who might be watching this on video at some point, but parenting, marriage, business, wealth, vibrant health and emotional mastery, or emotional intelligence.
I've been listening to a lot of your podcasts lately, and there's some depth to your community. I'm definitely
looking forward to checking it out.
Yeah,
yeah. Absolutely. We need you, Skylar. Come on, man. Join us, dude. You're exactly the type of person that we're looking for in the Brotherhood. I mean,
Do I have to get a haircut or anything?
No, dude. You're fit. No? You fit right in.
All right.
That's right. Hey, let's wrap this up, man. This is new. I'm doing this for the first time today, but one of the things, and I'll back up a little. Well, let me tell you what it is, and then I'll back up. I want to ask you 3 things that you can comment on. You can comment on all 3. They can be short answers or as long as you want. You take the rest of the whatever time. The 3 things are a relationship, a resource, and a result. And I want to share this because, and here's the backup, and I'll, in the backup, I'll also give you some context here so you can answer them. So over the course of the, 4 years, right, working with Front Row Dads, we've not only been designing what we want to have happen, but we're always looking back at what did happen, right? And what's been successful in the group. Because sometimes you intentionally create an idea and then bring it into existence. And other times you stumble upon the idea and you're like, holy shit, what just happened? How do we replicate that? Hmm. And one of the things that we've realized in Front Row Dads is that our engine, the pathway to being a rock star dad, is really three simple things. It's focusing on first the relationship. And this is having deep, connected relationships with people that bring out the best in you, and you can bring out the best in them, and that competitive brotherhood that makes everybody better and everybody is having more fun. So mm-hmm. relationship is key. And one of the questions is for you, Skylar, is what relationship in your life has been critical? What other father figure or brother or somebody that you might have been a mentor to that ended up being your teacher? But what relationship have you learned from? What's one thing or one person? So think about that from an angle of like, if we can honor somebody today in your tribe, in your life, in your timeline, who would that be? Second thing would be a resource. And this could be anything from a book that you have read and that's impacted your life, a quote that you've lived by, a mantra, an app that you find to be really productive, but a resource or a tool that we can share with the guys. And then lastly is a result. And there's two ways that you can look at the result. And this is number one, it could be a result that you've already experienced. So if you look back on your life and say, because I was able to achieve this, this by far has been one of the most important aspects of my life, right? And I could give you dozens of examples there from the time that I thought I was amazing at sex and then realized that I wasn't amazing at sex and read a couple of books and learned a couple of techniques and then figured out a thing about my wife and her body. And then all of a sudden, like, you know, that's a result that changed my life forever, right? Learning in and digging into that space changed my life forever. So it could also be a result though that you're chasing something that you want. So it could be a goal. So again, a relationship, a resource, and a result that you could share with us to wrap up the interview, man. And you can share one of those or all three of those. It's an open forum for you.
Those are great open-ended questions for one thing. A lot of people have these five-bullet wrap-up generic questions, but these are, boy, we could have started with this. You've got an hour.
Right. Be a whole here. Show, right?
Holy cow. Okay. But
no, ladies and gentlemen, buckle up for part two. This will be another 45-minute answer, except I won't say shit.
No. I'm going to keep it pretty brief. I mean, the relationship that we've been describing has been my relationship with kind of my nuclear family, my parents and my brothers, now that spilled over into my relationship with my boys and really striving for that blend of an authoritative mentor who's also in the game exploring there with them, right? But that's only been possible because of the relationship with my wife. It's the only reason why I get to be a wild man experimenting on the front lines is because I have that rock solid anchor of dependability and consistency. And it's that critical base from which all things can grow from. And fostering that relationship and caring for that relationship is my growth goals, right? To be able to do that. I mean, that's probably all the fun of showing things to my children is teaching them an obscure kettlebell lift or a snatch or what have you. That's really fun. Those are the fireworks. But really what they need is probably not dad showing off with weights as much as really being part of a loving relationship with me, with my wife, and them being part of that and thus feeling honored through that, right? I mean, they are the product of she and I. So that's the relationship that is most critical as far as being the foundation for everything else that I've talked about and all my showing off and all my fun and all my exploration. As far as a resource goes, I've read a bunch of parenting books when my wife was pregnant, and that's kind of the time you do such things, right? And nothing really stuck, I don't think. Nothing feels relevant still. I think the most important parenting book I ever read was Not Meant to Be One. It was Malcolm Gladwell's Outliers. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that one? That was, boy, what was that, 20 years ago that was published? There was a chapter at the end. Boy, that will fill you with all kinds of conflict about when should I put my children in school if I want them to be professional hockey players, if you know what chapter I'm talking about. But the one that really got to me as a relevant tool was the one about different nations' capacity in mathematical tests. Remember that one? That was one of the final chapters. He was kind of exploring the stereotype of Asians are good at math. And he was breaking mm-hmm. that down. And he found, well, yes, that is 100% true, but not because of why you think it is true. What he found was that in this large standardized test that they had children take to make generalizations about what program's working better, they found a very, very strong, a one-to-one correlate relationship between effort and reward as it comes to mathematics. And how they found this, or how Malcolm Gladwell articulated this, was that there was a lengthy background part before they let you take the test. You know, you've got all these kids ready to show that their country's good at math and what have you, and they're ready to get to it. But you've got like 21 questions of irrelevant, what's your favorite color, and just more personal questions, because they're trying to figure out what makes a good mathematician through these questions. And what they found was that it didn't matter what answers you had. It didn't matter what country you were from. What mattered was how many of these questions you're willing to answer was the one-to-one correlate to your success in this mathematical test. So the country that had the children that spent the most time answering most of the questions took number one in the math outcome test. The country that filled out the least amount of questions that were relevant took last place. And I believe that it was all the way through, it might have been 40 nations, in order. The more time you spent on these irrelevant questions, the better the math outcome you got. And he broke that down to, why is it that these Asian countries have more success with this? Why are they more willing to put more time into irrelevant tasks? And he broke it down to agriculture and how it wasn't about the country you're from, it was about the style of agriculture. If you were from a country with a rice paddy and you had the opportunity to spend more time in your rice paddy and you could be a rich rice farmer, and your neighbor who has the same resources spent less time knee-deep in his own rice paddy, he's going to be a poor rice farmer. And the American culture, not so great at math, doesn't function that way at all. We don't have our little corn plot, and the more time you spend in there tending to the corn, the more money you're going to have. It's more about taking big risks, taking big investments, buying more land, bigger tractor, you're a rich farmer. And I got so much out of that illustration. And I had these ambitions of, no, I'm not going to pay the kids $40 to mow the lawn. I'm going to pay them, I'm just going to throw pennies into the grass and they got to pick them up one by one. You know, like, this is how I'm going to make a great mathematician out of these boys. I didn't really stick with that concept, but because that's a silly thing to do. And
because all your windows are broken, pennies are flying everywhere.
Yeah. Do a great job, boys. But I try to keep that mentality in mind, and it does spill over into some of the other things that we're talking about, with the effort in, the reward out, or did you put in the time building up this movement, and is it quality now, and now you're stronger? You know, like little simple, small steps in the right direction, that establishing an effort-reward relationship works so much better than getting in your kid's face and telling them to work hard. You know, that's, I want them to feel it. I want them to feel that effort-reward relationship, and that Malcolm Gladwell's book from decades ago just crystallized that for me. That was such a great relationship builder for me.
So cool.
And then, well, I guess where I'm at right now with what I'm trying to do with my patient population, what I'm trying to do is, I guess I'm just trying to chase a fountain of youth so that way I can just keep doing this. It's what we do. You know, we try to design with a very, very conscious mindset. What's the foundation of an extremely healthy person who can remain physical, powerful, curious, and stay in front of the pack with their kids for as long as possible? Right? So it's no longer about being as strong as possible. It's about remaining very strong as long as possible. And that's the result that I pursue with my staff and my community and my patient base, everything from nutrition, mindset, and regenerative medicine, and warm up, cool down, strength programming. We really try to put together what I do basically for my children. I want to make that available to my community. And well, that's the result. You get to run around like a wild person in front of the pack and have your lovely wife keeping everything safe and sane. And yeah, that's the result that I'm very, very grateful to experience right now and talk about with you guys.
It's awesome. Dr. Pond, this has been awesome, man. Thank you for your time. And how people want to connect with you, where do they go find more?
Well, I didn't create a splash page for this or anything, but I'd love to open up to the Front Row Dads community. If any of you would like to get my feedback, where the heck do I start? I've got a 6-year-old daughter. Is it appropriate to get going with strength work, and what capacity? What's the safe way to do this? I'm happy to be an open book. I know you've got a lot of listeners, so I might regret this, but I will commit to responding one-on-one personal way, I'll give you my feedback. I'll just give you my personal email. You can get at me at Skylar, S-K-Y-L-A-R, at sportsmednw.com. So that's my company name, Sports Medicine Northwest, that will abbreviate down to sportsmednw.com. And yeah, even if it was a movement question, it's not really appropriate to just throw someone into high-intensity training. You have to become proficient and share your knowledge with your child, right? So if you wanted me to have a look at how you do a kettlebell deadlift or kettlebell swing or something along those lines and give you just a simple anchor point to start from, to start that relationship and that journey with your family, I'm available. I'll do it for you. Please reach out.
Awesome. Dr. Pond, really appreciate it, man. Thanks for making time for us. This was a really fun conversation.
My pleasure, and, 100%.
Got lots of value from this. So look Thank forward you. To more.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the show. And if you enjoyed this one, consider what other dad out there would enjoy it also and pass this episode along. And guys, make sure you're subscribed to the podcast so that you get notified whenever we release the latest episodes. And if you could, would you leave us a quick review if you haven't already done so? And if you have, thanks. Because not only do I read every one, but tons of other people are reading them too. And the more of those reviews we have and the better they are, the more chance we have to get other guys to say yes to checking this out, and we can help them in their journey to fatherhood and having a great marriage and just kicking ass family life. And also, before we go, would you like to get a short weekly email with a timely insight? You know, every Thursday, I send out this super short 3-minute read with a personal photo from my own experiences as I try to go all in on family life. So if you want to get some recent, relevant, and real stories of my failures and a few of my wins, then text Front Row Dads to 314-665-1767 and you'll get our weekly insights email. Last on the list, guys, if you're still looking at whether or not you should join the Brotherhood, then I want to leave you with a few comments from guys who are part of our tribe. And here's what they have to say about why they joined and what value they're getting out of our Brotherhood. So if you're ready to say yes, just go to frontrowdads.com and click Join the Brotherhood.
I'm super grateful. I was just at an event and I wore my Front Row Dad's hat. I can't tell you how many people asked me, like, what's that all about? And it's just so easy for me to talk about it because it's had such a big impact on me. It's a group that I've been looking for a long time. And I love what you're all about. And I'm really grateful that you've created that group. I think there's this whole other level that is there that's like epic that you can reach.
If you're listening to this, you already care about your family and your kids and your wife and growing. So I just challenge everyone that's hearing this to take it to the next level, whether that's joining this group or some other group, but just take it to the next level, to take your family to the next level.